Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Is there something magical about summer camp? Many moms and dads have fond memories of swimming, arts and crafts, and campfire ghost stories. But in this era of intensive parenting, they worry their kids won't fare as well outside of their care. But as a clinical psychologist, Michael Thompson wants to remind us that there are some aspects of growing up that happen only when children are beyond their parents' loving reach, and that summer camps offer a safe but challenging environment that helps kids mature. His new book is called Homesick and Happy: How Time Away from Parents Can Help a Child Grow. Michael, welcome to Think.
Thanks, Chris.
You remind us here that the goal of childhood is to grow up. What tells you that American parents may have lost sight of this?
I've been a school consultant for almost 30 years, and I found that over the years, I was getting more and more calls to go to schools to calm parents down before the sixth grade trip to New York or the fifth grade overnight science trip to Rhode Island. I'm based in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And I just found there were more and more anxious parents, and teachers began coming to me saying, I've been doing this fifth grade trip for 20 years, and now I've got parents who have to have this long talk with me before and talk about all of their child's anxieties and hand me a giant bag of vitamins with an inhaler that the child never asks for. But parents are just having, or some parents, I shouldn't say all parents, but some parents are having a much harder time letting go.
You have this list in the book of the things we cannot do for their children. I'm going to paraphrase a little bit, but I'm going to read it here. We can't make them happy, give them self-esteem, make friends for them, act as their managers and agents, create a second family, compete with digital media, keep them entirely safe, or make them independent. That is a devastating list, Michael, because it's essentially everything that parents want to do for their kids.
Well, I think I say in the chapter is everything parents wish they could do for their kids, but they can't.
Yeah.
You know, people are always talking to me about how to keep their children safe. And a mother will say to me, you know I should stop driving my three children to school, but I just can't stop. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, why do you think you should stop? And she said, the school's only three blocks away. And I say, well, how old are your kids? And she says, 11, 9, and 8. But she can't stop. 30 years ago, 80% of children in the United States walked or biked to school. That's down to 13%. And the problem is not only do the children miss the experience of feeling competent, getting yourself to school and back makes you feel competent and confident. The parents also miss out on the learning of, that their child is competent. So the parent stays in a kind of a protective state and doesn't see that her 11-year-old could certainly walk with a 9-year-old and the 8-year-old to school. In fact, in Tokyo, where I've consulted to some schools, first graders, that is 6-year-olds, are required to come to school on their own. So when you're in Tokyo, you see 6-year-olds walking everywhere. Now, safer society, collectivist society, they watch out for children in a different way. But still, when you see it, it reminds you that 6-year-olds are in fact capable not only of walking to school on their own, but taking the subway on their own.
You know, it's interesting when you say a safer society, because I think, you know, we feel that way now, that it's not as safe as it used to be. And yet I don't think I know a single adult who wouldn't stop to help a child in obvious trouble.
Me, I'm with you. I'm with you, Chris. I'm with you. And our imagined fears, of course, not rational, though there are children who were snatched and murdered and raped by strange creeps. And if it had happened to my child, I would never have been able to psychologically recover. Of course, 5 children a week in the United States are killed in a car with their parents driving. So that's what I mean by you can't ever be sure of keeping your children perfectly safe. You can't protect them. Even when you're at the wheel, you can't protect them.
What were summers like for you as a kid?
Oh, well, you're talking to a New York City boy. And summer camps were practically invented for city kids. Mm-hmm. All the camps in New England were originally set up for 3 reasons. One was to get fancy pants rich kids out to develop manly skills in the woods.
Like Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah, exactly. And then there were many camps that were religious. The Methodists and the Lutherans, particularly, didn't want children just to be hanging around the streets of New York in the summer because it would be an occasion for sin. And then the Jewish community, particularly around the turn of the century, built a huge number of camps because they wanted it for the sake of Jewish identity. And I still think the New York Jewish community is probably the most camp-oriented, camp-committed community in the United States. Hmm. It's more powerful for Jewish identity than Jewish day schools or even going to temple is the Jewish summer camp experience.
Why is that?
You want a funny answer?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a rabbi once said, you know, let's be honest, it's, you go to Jewish summer camp and the first kid you make out with or kiss is another Jewish kid, and it kind of solidifies your Jewish identity. And I think that's very funny. But I've heard wonderful stories from Lutherans about going to evening services at camp and then going down and, you know, making out by the lake. And it turns out that when you go to camp, the combination of nature and a coherent community living by a set of community values and rules really binds you and helps shape your identity. Look, I've visited over 500 schools in the past 30 years, and I've been given many, many school tours, more than I can count. And kids talk about their teams and how they win and their best students and the burdens of school. But when you go to camp and you get a tour, they tell you about the values and the woodcraft laws and the this and that, and they can even recite them. There's something about living in a camp community which makes kids focus on their own character and their own identity in a very special way.
We should note here that you are, in fact, talking about these sort of general purpose camps. They may or may not have a religious affiliation, but you don't mean a camp where you spend 12 hours a day learning soccer skills or building robots or something like that.
In the book, I say that for me, camp is a psychological experience. And it's one of community and where people are addressing your character. My own daughter was a very gifted athlete. And so she went to a ton of one-week soccer camps, and she went to a ton of one-week ice hockey camps. And they're not camps in the way I'm talking about. I'm talking about a longer-term experience where you're living in cabins with 8 or 10 kids, and you're sitting at campfires at night. But most especially, the thing that makes a camp is not the emphasis on skills. It's the emphasis on community and community rituals and traditions, which kids love. And the whole thing is run by 19, 20, 21, 22-year-olds. It's the only place in America where a 10-year-old or an 11-year-old can spend 3 weeks or 4 weeks with a 19-year-old very interested in him or her. And they just worship those counselors. They think they're demigods and demigoddesses. And of course they are.
So parents obviously want to know that they can trust these demigods and demigoddesses. What kinds of questions are appropriate to ask about the programs and about the philosophy of the camp?
It's the program, whether it's horseback riding or kayaking or caving or whatever it is, doesn't matter. What matters is that there's a camp director who's a good judge of character and knows how to hire excellent counselors. And so when parents are anxious, they have to talk to the camp director because they have to know that that person gets kids but also knows how to train and supervise young adults. Because I know this is scary for some people, but if you send an 11-year-old to a canoe camp, I'm the consultant for a canoe camp in Vermont and another in Ontario, your 11-year-old's life is in the hands of a 19-year-old. And the director of the camp has to pick that 19-year-old very carefully. What happens at camp is that they mostly choose counselors from the campers who come up. So in fact, before you get chosen as a camp counselor at 19, the director's been watching you since age 9 and saying, is this boy or girl someone with potential leadership skills? Is this an empathic, compassionate, responsible kid? The best leadership training I know in America for kids is summer camps.
You talk about the fact that camp is special in part because it's simply not school. Can you tell us what you mean by that?
Well, you know, I'm devoted to school. I've been a school psychologist for 30-plus years, and I respect the work of teachers in schools, but schools are stressful places. and they're constant evaluation, constant tests, constant pointing in the right direction, a good college, a this or that, a scholarship. Everybody in school is about the next steps. Camp is not. And I give an example in the book, you know, I laugh at myself and I say, here I'm saying school's not tests, but at camp there are tests and swim tests and color wars and competitions all the time. But I give the example of a girls' camp out in western Massachusetts where on the last day of the color wars, they had a frozen T-shirt contest. And I was embarrassed by the name. I thought I shouldn't be a man. I was the only man on the there. Frozen T-shirt didn't sound good to me, but they had put these, they had wet down these T-shirts, stuck them in the freezer, and turned them into ice balls. And each color team, green, yellow, red, blue, had to appoint a champion who would tear this shirt apart and get it on in some way over what she was wearing. And these girls were lunatics. I mean, pounding this shirt, it's very hard, in fact, to unwrap a frozen T-shirt. And the girls were all cheering, and the athletes were competing. But, of course, it was profoundly silly. And it wasn't to impress the varsity something coach back at school.
Yeah, so if you lose, nobody cares.
Exactly. Low stakes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's also this idea that the time sort of slows down at camp. It's funny because we adults recognize that we are busy all the time, but very few kids are unscheduled these days.
And almost no kids are without electronics.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have a camp where kids are just walking and talking, and girls are walking arm in arm back from the dining hall, and they're not rushing any place, and most camps have a nap time or a rest time after lunch, and where you see boys lying on beds and reading comics, or boys playing cards, girls playing cards or games or even jacks. I mean, I'm an old guy. Maybe it just makes me nostalgic, but I see a different kid at camp than I see at school.
Do most camps have rules that say no Game Boys, no cell phones, no laptops?
You know, a few of them are starting to break down because they're afraid they won't be able to attract modern kids.
Wow.
What I say in the book to parents, and I've really written for parents, the parent I've written for is the parent who's calling a camp director and saying, well, my 9-year-old says she's ready to go, but I'm not ready for her to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to remind parents of how sweet the time is away from the pressures of school and away from your parents' expectations. But now part of that is also away from electronics. And most camps are not permitting screens. They are letting kids bring music.
Mm-hmm.
Some are. Some are total electronics-free zones, the last in America.
And you say that if kids are going to write back and forth, snail mail is probably better than anything else.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. They may be the only letters that now pass between parents and children. I just had a woman close to my age. I'm in my 60s. She's in her late 50s, and her dad died. And she went back and cleaned out his house. And she found her parents had saved all of her camp letters.
Hmm.
And she was so touched to read her little girl communication with her parents, but so touched that her parents kept them. Now, what I'm finding is that parents love the letters, but they feel a compulsion to email them right back and have the camp director deliver the email.
Hmm.
No, letters both ways.
Michael Thompson is my guest. He's a clinical psychologist and author of the new book, Homesick and Happy, How Time Away from Parents Can Help a Child Grow. Welcome back to the conversation in a couple of minutes. You can get on the line now to join us. The number is 1-800-933-5372. We're also taking emails at think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. You can enrich your career with new certificate programs in financial planning, web design, graphic design, and paralegal studies. And you can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is clinical psychologist and author Michael Thompson. His new book is called Homesick and Happy: How Time Away from Parents Can Help a Child Grow. Join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. We'd also love to hear from you if perhaps you have a story of your own camp experiences or one of your children's. Michael, I think it might be easier for parents whose kids are gregarious and adventurous to send those kids off to camp. What do you say to those whose kids, for whatever reason, don't make friends easily, don't have an easy time adjusting to new situations?
Adjusting to new situations is part of growing up, and it's harder for some kids. You're quite right, Chris. Look, I have two children. I have a daughter who was bold and was always out the door and always having sleepovers, and I had a boy, now a man, in college, but he was a more anxious kid and had struggled more in these ways. My daughter was sort of flew off to camp, and my son waited until he was older. Mm-hmm. And I kind of had to give him a big push, which is hard for my wife because she'd never been to camp. And I was the camp proponent in our family. And my son didn't have a great first year, but he went back second year and came back so much stronger and more grown up. At the end of the second year, he looked me in the eye because he was very close to my height by that time. He was just about turned 50, and he said, "Dad, I get the camp thing, but this isn't the right kind of camp for me." I was sending him to my old canoeing, kayaking camp. And I said, "What do you want, Will?" And he said, "I want to go to an arts camp." So he went to a camp. He found great friends there. And he still teaches woodworking at a summer camp in the summers.
Wow.
He learned those skills at camp. It wasn't anything that he could have learned. So here's what happened. When I began to learn what the research was on homesickness, and even though I was a psychologist, I hadn't read that research until I wrote this book, and I learned that 81%, almost all kids have some homesickness, 81% have a mild form, but 19% have a significant distress at points when they're away, and a band of 6% that's inside that 19% have unremitting homesickness every day, never mm-hmm. leaves them. And so I went to my son Will when he was 21, and I said, "Will, looking back, I know you had a lot of homesickness that first year. Was it every day?" He said, "Yes, Dad." I said, "Every day, really?" "Yes, Dad. It never let up, not till the last 2 or 3 days, Dad." I said, "Well, why'd you go back the second year?" He said, "You wanted me to, Dad." And then I felt terrible, right? But I said, "But you didn't give me a fight, Will. You could have fought me. Why didn't you?" And he said, "Dad, if you can't learn to sleep away from home, it means you have to live with your parents for the rest of your life." And, you know, kids get that. My mm-hmm. son got it. I had a woman in Toronto who said to me, "I had a terrible first year at camp." I said, "So what'd you do?" She said, "I had to go back. I had to beat that thing." And kids know that this learning to be away is a step on their journey to adulthood. It's their parents who want to protect them from the pain of being away from their parents. Kids know they have to do it, or else you have to live in your parents' house for the rest of your life.
And you remind us that homesickness is, even in its severe form, not a mental illness, and that we shouldn't make that deal with kids, like, if you really hate it, fine, we'll come pick you up early.
Oh, that is the kiss of death, because then a child has no motivation to adjust to camp. In fact, they have a motivation to be as unhappy as possible, so when you show up at mid-season, they can say, "I'm really unhappy, Mom and Dad," and you take him home. I had a boy who told me his parents made that deal and they came up, and he whined and tried to manipulate him and said, "I hate the place." And they said, "Well, we've changed our mind." He said he was enraged. And he said, looking back, it was the single best parenting decision my parents ever made.
Wow. 1-800.
They said, "Grow up time," you know?
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's speak to Nancy in Weatherford. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
It's a great conversation. I really enjoyed it. I thought I would share that my son was one of those very nerdy, socially awkward children in school. I had a terrible time all the way up until maybe his last year or two in high school. But in middle school and in junior high school, when he was having a terrible time in school, he always had a wonderful time at camp. It was almost as though he could step out of that person that he was or that he thought he was and really bloom at camp. He looked forward to it so much. And I just thought that might be an interesting topic for your guest to comment on.
Yeah, thanks so much, Nancy.
You know, Nancy, I love this story, and I interviewed hundreds of kids, and the thing that kids at many different camps, many different ages, said to me more than anything else is, you can really be yourself at camp. The girls said, you don't have to put on makeup, you don't have to look good, you can, but many kids commented that somehow your true identity comes out, can come out at camp. I'm not sure even now that I understand all the magical elements of that, but I know I have a lot of testimony to that effect.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Thomas is on the line now in Arlington. Hey, Thomas.
Hello. I've got two kids, and I grew up going to camps and went all the way through until I was 18. I've got my son who absolutely loves it, and I got my daughter who I've never been able to send because she literally just fights tooth and nail to screaming, yelling, crying that she refuses to go to camp.
How old is she, Thomas?
Well, she's 14 now, but
yep.
The last 3 years I've been trying to send her since she was about 11.
Right.
And she's not socially awkward. She just, this idea of camp to her is just, and I was wondering, she might be a little older now, but is there a way to convince the child that this is going to be beneficial without...
If a 14-year-old's dug in, I don't think they're going to do it. But does she do sleepovers at friends' houses?
Hold on, let me pull him back up again. Does she sleep over at other friends' houses, Thomas?
She does, all the time.
Mm-hmm. All right. So it's probably leaving her friends that's most the issue, and that's what girls often fight about, because their loyalty to their friendship group, if none of their friends are going, can really be a barrier. I you're going to have a tough time getting her to camp at 14. What you might want to get her to do, though, is a bicycle trip in the Rockies with a whole lot of 15-year-olds, or maybe even when she's in high school, a semester abroad. I have a friend whose daughter had never been to camp, but in high school, she wanted to do a 3-week trip to Japan. It was a life changer for her. There are opportunities, but camp's a hard sell to a 14-year-old who's been against it for 3 years. I just, some kids, just they're just not drawn to it.
So you make it sound so great that I think now we all want this for our kids. What do you say, though, Michael? The reality is that summer camp, I've looked into it, it's very expensive. For families that don't have the means, are there sort of different experiences that we can do without digging into the college fund?
Yeah, I mean, I think people tend to think of high-end camps. There are great, great camps. First of all, scout camps, YMCA camps. There are a lot of nonprofit camps in this country. In fact, I'm not sure of the ratios, but I'd bet there are more nonprofit camps than there are for-profit camps. You can find them. I wrote one of the chapters about a camp in Vermont that costs $315 a week, and many people can pull that together. The camp very proudly calls itself the cheapest camp in Vermont. and the Ben and Jerry, the ice cream guys, and their kids are. I believe if you do the work, you can find a camp. Their churches have camps. I'm told there are 1,800 Christian evangelical summer sleepaway camps in the country, maybe even more. There are camps that where you can find support, and if you really want it, you just have to dig and do the research.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next with Amy in Denton. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead.
Amy.
Go right ahead, please.
I was listening just now to your guest talk about YMCA camp. My parents sent me to YMCA camp when I was 11, and I eventually became a camp counselor because I loved it so much. And the YMCA does offer programs for people who cannot afford to send their kids to camp. So I'm a real big advocate, excuse me, of the YMCA. But I counseled kids from the age of 7 to 13, at first just girls. 1 week, one of our male counselors fell ill, and I found myself with a cabin of 12 17-year-old boys, which was very interesting.
No kidding.
The point I wanted to just make is that kids are very resilient, and you kind of have to take a leap of faith with them. Most of the kids did experience mild homesickness, but in all my years of going up there, I only had to send a child home once. And this was one of those 7-year-old boys because he simply couldn't, he just couldn't handle going off to the bathroom in the dark in the middle of the night. It was just too much for him. But I just think camp is the most wonderful experience. The people that I met there, they are all my friends on Facebook, and we all reminisce and say, this was the greatest time of our lives. You know, you have a certain amount of freedom, you're away from your parents, it helps you to discover yourself, what you're good at, and kids make friends very quickly at camp, and they become very close, they come back year after year, and it's a wonderful experience, and I think that any parent who is even thinking about trying to give their kid a camp experience should really, really try, because I have lifelong friends and such wonderful experiences that I will cherish forever.
Well, Amy, thank you so much for sharing your story. And Michael, to Amy's point that, you know, she was sort of dealt successfully with the kids who had homesickness. How are camp counselors typically trained to work with kids who are, you know, just having a rough day or a rough night and want to go home?
I think they're trained better and better as the years go on. They used to just pick very kind of empathic, intuitive kids, but they now do much more systematic training. They're taught to comfort them. They're taught to listen to them and listen to their stories and occasionally sit on the side of their bed when a child's crying at nighttime. It's usually at bedtime that children tend to unravel and wish for the, you know, their own pillow and their own pet and their own mom. And they are taught to listen and comfort, but also to distract and challenge. Come on, try this. I think you'll be good at it. And the moment a child takes a challenge and feels successful, well, you're not so homesick after that. But I want to say one thing about the camps for the resilience that Amy was talking about. I visited Texas, actually. I went to several camps, both for a for-profit camp on LBJ Lake and in Marble Arch, and then I went to a camp for very sick kids, and there were very, very sick children from Houston Children's Hospital going to this camp for all, and they have one-week programs for kids with very serious diseases, kids with who had amputations, kids with spina bifida, and those kids, can you imagine the courage it takes for those kids to go to camp? They are so happy there. The kids I talked to at this camp for all said that it was a piece of paradise to them. And a girl said, isn't everybody entitled to a piece of paradise? It's the only time we get to be with kids who have the same illness, when we can let down our guard, and we're with our people. And I probably the most touching testimony I got about camp came from that camp for all in Texas.
Let's go back to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have Adolfo on the line in Dallas. Hi, Adolfo.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So it's really fitting that your guest just mentioned that about sick kids. I'm actually a medical student in Dallas, and we have a lot of camps close to the Dallas and, you know, Central Texas region designed for kids who have, you know, type 1 diabetes, which is often called the child onset diabetes, and for kids who have sickle cell and who have hemophilia. And my comment was just that earlier your guest was talking about how parents were a little bit more concerned and didn't want to let go of their children to go to camp. And our experience has actually been the complete opposite in Dallas, where parents who have kids who, you know, have all these different kind of illnesses or conditions are actually very willing to let their kids go off to camp. And these kids, you know, just like your guest was mentioning, have a wonderful time. Their camp counselors are actually older adolescents, or, you know, kids in their 19s all the way up until they're 21 years old with these diseases, and they get to learn from them, and they come out from camp, you know, whole different person.
Well, thank you so much for that call, Adolfo. It sounds like a really wonderful environment that he's worked in.
And Adolfo talks about the connection between the kids with an illness seeing a counselor who has the same illness. I attended a camp for kids with HIV and AIDS, and most of the counselors were HIV positive. And so they could say to these kids, look, you can make a life. Mm-hmm. We're making a life. And they embodied hope. And one of the girls at the camp said to me, now you have to remember that they talk the language of HIV all the time, and you're either positive or negative. One of the girls said, here all the counselors hug you, even the negative counselors hug you.
Hmm. Yeah, and I guess in those cases, these kids have probably dealt on top of whatever physical ailments they have with stigma that doesn't exist at camp.
That's right. At camp, you all got the same condition.
Hmm. We have an email here from Karen who wants to know, does it matter how long the camp is? Is a week long enough for a 9-year-old? And should the camp be mixed ages? She says, I'm nervous about high school campers with elementary campers.
I went into it with a bias, probably because I'd had longer, you know, multi-week camp experiences myself. I was amazed at how much testimony people had about the life-changing impact of one-week camps.
Hmm.
So I came to think that the intensity of the camp and the power of the culture and the rituals carry the day. Kids who like camp tend to want to go for longer stretches. I'm not as worried because the younger kids and the older kids don't mix, except at things like campfires. And then the younger kids just watch fascinated at the responsible behavior and the leadership of these older kids.
My guest is clinical psychologist and author Michael Thompson. His new book is called Homesick and Happy: How Time Away from Parents Can Help a Child Grow. We'll talk more after this break. You can call in to 1-800-933-5372 if you want to join us.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. You can enrich your career with new certificate programs in financial planning, web design, graphic design, and paralegal studies. And you can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Michael Thompson is my guest this hour. He's a clinical psychologist and author of the new book, Homesick and Happy: How Time Away from Parents Can Help a Child Grow. Join us at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Michael, we've talked a lot about kids and homesickness. What do we do with parents who experience child sickness, that miss their kids?
You know, part of sending a camp, your child to camp, is you're making a philosophical decision that the things your child needs to do away from you. And once you make that decision, you have to follow through with it and not try and contact them constantly. Camps are, because the parents are so anxious, and camps are putting up pictures on their website every day. And then the parents pore over these pictures and then get anxious if their child isn't smiling. I mean, you know, and I'm tough with parents. I say, look, you're seeing a picture of your child on the camp website does not contribute in any way to your child's camp experience.
Hmm.
The point of the camp experience is they're away from you, and they get to own the activity. You know, when a child plays town sports and dad is always standing at the sidelines, the kid thinks, what's this dad thinking? What's dad thinking? What's dad going to say in the car going home? And town sports kids say that the thing they hate most about town sports is the ride home with parents. When you're at camp, you can have your own adventures, take your own risks, or avoid risks, without your parents having to a say in it. And that freedom really helps a child define his or her identity.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Eric is on the line now in Arlington. Hi, Eric.
Chris. I worked at a camp in Ohio for the last three summers as a counselor there, and I was just listening to what you guys were talking about. And with the kids and parents trying to contact each other, one of the things that we did that worked out really well is if the kids wanted to, like, talk to their parents, what we'd have them do is just write a letter. I mean, people don't do that anymore, and the thing with writing a letter is the parents are going to get it, they're going to understand it, but it's not that super personal conversation where you're to get, like, you're actually talking one-on-one with the person.
And the child doesn't unravel the way they do if they hear their mom's voice from far away.
It can
throw a kid into homesickness. But I'm finding a lot of parents want to call a camp to comfort their child's homesickness, and all they do is make it worse.
Yeah, we had an email here. Let me see if I can dig it out of my stack. In elementary school, this is from Amanda in Fort Worth. I went to Girl Scout camp 2 years in a row. Both years I had pretty bad homesickness. The camp had a policy of no phone calls to parents, but the director would talk to parents and relay a message. Of course, at the time, I thought it was an unfair rule, but I realize now that talking to the director helped me get through the week better than if I had talked to my parents.
So. I think that's right, Amanda.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's speak to Bob in Denton now. Hey, Bob.
Hey, how you doing? Love your show.
Thank you.
I'd be sitting in a parking lot at a bank, not going in because I want to talk to you.
Driveway moment. Perfect.
There's a parking lot moment. But anyway, I grew up in camp. I love camp. I always had a great time. I don't do camp with the kids right now. I have two 10-year-olds. The only two things that we do, only one thing we do with them is our church goes to Navajo land as a mission trip. And the kids are starting to go. We go also, but they really have their own part to do. You know, my son does this, my daughter does this. They have their own roles and jobs to do. And I don't know if that's really the camp experience. And then my son has an opportunity to go to karate camp in the next, I think, 2 or 3 years. He can start going to a karate camp, which is a week long. Do those kind of do that same psychological growth that they would get in a true camp? You send them off for 3 weeks or 2 weeks and don't hear from them until...
No, if you go with your parents, no, it's not the same. It's good, Bob. I believe in family camps, and yes, there's a lot of separateness between kids and parents, but in it's not the same growth impact as having them go away. When they get on that bus and they're not going to see you for a week or two, that's a big growth moment for kids. But I believe in day camps. And I think kids are always anxious to grow. So I'm not claiming that sleepaway camps has a monopoly on growth. It's living in a cabin with people, making a community with its own rules and rituals that have nothing to do with home and where you master it. I think that has a pretty profound and, for many people, a life-changing effect. So you're half step or two-thirds of a step, but you're not all the way with your kids.
I'm thinking back to you saying earlier that, kids often have their first kiss at camp. And I wonder if that is part of the sort of testing of boundaries, you know, relatively safe boundaries, that can't happen as easily when kids are surrounded at all times by their parents.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Hard to kiss somebody when your parents are right around the corner.
But you know what I mean? People's
people
stories are always about
for
camp.
Millions of years, but it's, when you get away, you feel a little freer to take a number of kinds of risks.
Mm-hmm. Ever any problems about kids not getting along with their bunkmates and things like that? And do camps address those issues?
Yes, and that's one reason why the camp values are often so important, because if you have a very annoying kid in your cabin, and you know you're going to be with her for 3 weeks, you've got to learn to respect her space. You can't bully her because it ruins the community, and also it ruins the relationship with your counselor, whom you respect and who wants things to go well. And I have seen a lot of kids develop tolerance and compassion, even though they're annoyed, because they want their cabin to stand tall, to pass inspections, to meet whatever challenges they are, you know? And besides that, annoying girl could end up being very good in the color war, you know? And she might be on your team.
She's an ace at archery, so she's worth
there you go.
Palling around with. All right. Let's go back to the phones now. This time we have Mark on the line in Plano. Hey, Mark.
Hi, Chris. Thanks very much. This is an interesting show for me because it brings back views that are different in my own mind. I went to camp when I was 12 and had less than a good experience. I thought your guest made a very good point about the difference between school where there's so much competition and camp where there is something perhaps better than competition. But I wanted to speak on behalf of a model that combines the two. My son was somewhat introverted. I didn't see him as having much trouble, but in fact, I think he was a little more troubled than I realized. And when he was 13, he went to a camp experience. It was a gifted student program for 13-year-olds that SMU sponsored. And it was a life-changing experience for him. He found people who were as nerdy as he was and felt comfortable with them. And it gave him a sense of self-confidence that it's now 20 years later, and it stood by him for all that time.
Well, thank you so much for calling, Mark. That's a great story.
Mark, your point's well taken. It doesn't have to be kayaks or horseback riding. If you're with your people and you're away, and you can make your way in a new community where you think your identity and values are supported, it can have a huge impact on your growth. I'm glad your son found that program, you found it for him.
So let me ask you this, Michael. If it is so good for kids to be away and out of their day-to-day milieu, should we avoid sending them to camp with their two best friends?
Well, it can be wonderful. It can be reduce the anxiety of going to camp the first time. If you go with friends, you know you're going to have a friend there. But sometimes then friends do what friends do, which is they start to like other people, and that hurts your feelings. And it isn't a guarantee of success. I would prefer for parents not to send kids as a group and want them all in a cabin as a group. It makes the dynamics of the cabin a little tough, and it doesn't always help the friendships.
Let's go back to the phones now. We have Gus on the line in Dallas. Hey, Gus.
Hey, Chris. Michael, a friend of mine has got a 14-year-old son who expressed an interest in going to a Marine summer camp.
Yeah.
I wonder if do you have any ideas on the benefits and drawbacks of a
camp like that? As a volunteer. I believe in volunteer military. No, but 14-year-old boys are very often obsessed with being men, with getting shaped up, with commanding the respect of other men, and commanding the respect especially of their peers. And he can go to Marine camp, be tested and challenged, pass those tests, most will be physical and some psychological. He'll come back, he'll say to his friends, "I went to Marine camp," and they'll all go, "Whoa." And that's part of what he's looking for, to test himself, but also the respect of his peers. He'll find it. I none of those camps could survive if they were cruel. I mean, this is not basic training. It's not live ammo. You know, it's not the Marines. But they will push them. That's what the name Marines means. Whenever you hear it,
I guess each kid is different. But is there a general rule as to the right age to start sleepaway camp?
I get asked this all the time, and the answer is I've seen happy kids at camp as young as 6. Usually the third child of a family where the two older ones have gone, and that kid's been hearing about camp and can't wait to go.
Yeah.
I've known other kids who aren't really ready to go until 12 or 13. As you get older, it's tougher to join a general camp where kids have been going year after year because you're kind of a late arrival. There are lots of programs like National Outdoor Leadership School, Adventure Trek, Outward Bound, where you can go at 14 and 15, and everybody else is new too because it's not a camp; it's a wilderness adventure, and everybody's new to it.
Anything we can do ahead of time besides stocking them up with bug repellent and that sort of thing to get them ready for the experience?
Absolutely, a couple of things. First of all, sleepovers. Sleeping over at friends' house, going to grandma and grandpa's for a week, going to aunt and uncle's for an extended weekend, all of any sleeping away from home experience is good practice for camp. And you can sometimes do the letter writing practice when they're at their grandparents for a week. And so they get the hang of that, communicating by letter. Younger kids have a funny sense of time. And doing a little calendar work, this would be your third day of camp, now this would be your ninth day of camp, you know, that giving a kid a way to sort of think about the time. And finally, talking to him about homesickness. Mm-hmm. Homesickness means you have a home worth missing. It's a completely normal feeling. It can be very painful sometimes. What are you going to do, sweetie? Do you think you'll be homesick? How do you think you'll get over it? Will you go talk to your counselor? Will you talk to your friends? So you do a little kind of rehearsal for homesickness.
That's interesting advice, because I think some parents would be afraid to even broach the subject for fear of planting the idea.
I know, but I'm a psychologist, Chris. We think talking about things makes them better, and we're right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, incidentally, the American Camping Association has a wonderful tape, videotape, that parents can use to help get children ready for camp.
I'm guessing that's probably available online these days, too.
Yeah, on the ACA website.
All right, so Michael, I want to ask you this. You could have added to the growing collection of books warning us parents against helicopter parenting.
Right.
Why did you take this approach instead?
You know, I've read all those books, and I just think authors who punch parents in the nose, telling them they're doing a crappy job, are not going to sell books.
Mm-hmm.
And it hurts parents' feelings to attack them. The Hiram Murano colleague wrote a book called The Nation of Wimps about helicopter parenting. And it was beautifully researched and well-written, but as a parent, you feel insulted. And I thought, I want to remind parents that some of the sweetest moments of all of our childhoods when we were away from our parents.
Mm-hmm.
That sweet time when you're away from your parents, with your friends, doing something challenging, a little bit risky, and that's camp to me.
It makes sense, too, because I doubt very many parents would look at themselves and say, I am a terrible helicopter parent. Let me purchase this book for $24.95.
Right.
So your kids are grown now. Do you imagine that someday your grandkids will be sent to camp?
Well, I have a 3-month-old granddaughter, my first grandchild.
Congratulations.
And I'm not thinking about camp for quite yet. But I hope it's in her future. I hope it's in most kids' future, actually.
Michael Thompson is a clinical psychologist and author. His new book is called Homesick and Happy, How Time Away from Parents Can Help a Child Grow. Michael, it's been a really interesting hour. Thank you so much for spending it with us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Chris.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. Joe Bellotti answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. And our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. You can learn more about Think, also find out about upcoming programs, and download the daily podcast, which is free at kera.org/think. Email any comments, questions, or suggestions for the show to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.